Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we're going to talk with a lady who runs a magazine called Mystery Scene Magazine. It's the best mystery magazine there is out there today, actually, and it's my favorite right now. Her name is Kate Stein. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm very well.
Now, this Mystery Scene Magazine, I'm curious. This is issue number 128, the new one I have with Sue Grant on the cover, right? So how long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing this at Mystery Scene since 2002.
So you're in your, this is a year 11 then for you.
Yeah. 11. Yeah, God, it seems, so long.
I know, time just passes, and before you know it, all this time has passed, and you're like, where did it all go?
Yeah. So. Now, the magazine itself was founded in 1986.
Now, who was it founded by?
By Ed Gorman.
Oh, Ed Gorman, okay.
Yeah.
That name I know.
And Robert Randese.
Oh, okay. So how did you get involved with it?
Ed and Bob were running it for a while, and Marty Greenberg came in and ran it. And I was actually the editor of a competing magazine called The Armchair Detective.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, that was actually the first mystery fan magazine. And I edited that for, 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was doing that, I became friends with Ed because, there aren't that many mystery magazine editors.
No.
So we all know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet at conventions and stuff. And, we just became friendly. And then Armchair Detective went out of business, and I moved on to some other things.
Right.
And then in 2002, he just called me on the phone and asked me if I wanted a mystery magazine.
Wow, how cool is that? You must have been
very cool.
Yeah, you must have been awfully excited.
I did. I paused for about 5 seconds, and I said, yes! And then I said, I should ask my husband before I say yes.
That's right. But knowing how much you wanted it, I'm sure it wasn't any problem after that.
Well, my husband and I met at a mystery convention, so he's a huge mystery fan.
Oh, okay.
And,
so who reads more?
This is definitely more than a one-person.
Right. Who reads more, you or your husband?
I tend to, I would say probably of mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he reads vintage books. I read more newer.
Oh, okay.
Things. He's a huge puzzle fan. So he loves those older books and some of the newer writers that are writing in that tradition. And I tend to read more contemporary writers.
Now, this magazine, where is it fully available? I know it's available at Barnes & Noble, and we used to have it at our independent when I worked there, which is going to open again in a new space. But where can people get it generally?
It's, like you said, it's available at Barnes & Noble. So a lot of the, other chain bookstores have gone out of business, so that's a problem. We're available in, something like 500 libraries across the country. Of course, you can always subscribe or buy back issues at mysteryscenemag.com.
Right.
And we're also in, I think, 30 mystery bookstores.
That's wonderful.
So, and you can always ask Barnes & Noble to stock it in their newsstand.
Right, exactly. Since
they'll order it if a customer wants it.
They can always say, well, that Barnes & Noble has it, why don't you?
Yeah, and if they know there's a demand, of course they want to stock something.
Now, this one in particular, this is the, I guess this is the February issue? Oh, they really don't have a month issue here, do they?
There's we have 5 issues a year.
Right.
So it's February, April, June, September, and November.
Oh, okay, cool. That's good to know. Now, this one is 68 pages. Are they always 68 pages?
Yeah.
It's always the same length.
Yeah. I mean, occasionally we'll, bump it up, but I like to keep it at 68 because it's much easier to mail.
Oh.
It's heavy paper because it's all color.
Right.
So, you really start to get into some weight problems if it's...
Now, there's so much in the magazine that's fascinating. The docket is in the front here that tells you all the list of upcoming mystery, what do you call them?
Conventions.
Conventions, thank you. The word wouldn't come to me. So, and we get to see, and that's so helpful during the year. There's so many of them now. I remember when there were just a couple, and now there's 10 to 15 a year at least.
And for the most part, those conventions that we're listing there are events for fans. For readers, because that's Mystery Scene's focus. There are a ton more if you're looking for writing instruction.
Okay, like the international one. That's more for the writers, the International Thriller Writers Convention.
Yeah, although, you know, they tell me that they get, you know, like more than 50% are just readers who want to come and, you know, listen to the writers talk.
That's always, I mean, you get to those panels, and they're always so fascinating to listen to. I mean, every author has a different story to tell, and that's what makes it so. And that's what I would say about the Sue Grantin article on this issue. Is so, I mean, there are things in this article I never even knew about her.
I know. You know, that was our writer Kevin Burton Smith did a wonderful job on that, because that, you know, I mean, that's a difficult interview to have. I mean, for people who haven't read it. Sue Grafton was talking about her childhood, where both of her parents were alcoholics, and I mean, it was very difficult.
We think we have it bad, then you hear things like that, and you think, how do you live with two alcoholics? I mean,
yeah.
The horror, you can't even imagine the horror of it. I mean, but to bring out that in the author, I mean, we've all read Sue Grafton. I mean, what a tremendous writer. I mean, I just love sitting down with one of her books and reading it. I mean, she's really an icon in the mystery field.
Oh, she is. Yeah, definitely. She's one of the most influential writers of the past 50 years, I would say.
And a nice lady, because I've interviewed her over the phone, and she's just very, very giving and very sweet, just a really nice person.
The book she was discussing is called Kinsey and Me,
mm-hmm.
and it was sort of based on, there were characters in there that were based on her childhood. So.
Now, about how many, and this may put you on the spot, but about how many books do you read a year, would you say?
Oh, you know, let's see. Setting aside, you know, I have an interest in, like, contemporary issues in psychology. So I would say mysteries, I probably read, you know, 35, 40.
40, yeah. For me, I mean, I read very slowly. I wish I could read faster, because there's so many books I want to read, and I never get to them all in one year. I don't know how you could possibly get to every one.
Yeah. I mean, those are books I finish. A lot of books I'll read two or three chapters of to get the sense of, so that I can decide if we're going to review them or...
Right. Well, I guess you have to, just for expediency sometimes. I mean, it's hard to read everything.
And I certainly don't want to give the impression that I'm the only person working on the magazine, because I'm not.
Right. Well, then we probably wouldn't even be talking if that were true.
Yeah. I mean, we have like, what do we have? We have 35 or 40 reviewers,
mm-hmm.
who are writing book reviews and columns. And then we have, you know, a rotating crew of like, I don't know, 12 to 15 feature writers. And you know, Terry Doerr is our senior editor, who is also handles the book review section. And, you know, she does wonderful work, and
it's like one big machine.
You know, it's funny, because everybody's just flung everywhere around the country, and our art director's in Sweden, and we do a lot of things on the internet.
It's amazing what the internet has opened up for everybody. I mean, you can talk to people all over the world in an instant now, and you never used to be able to do that.
Oh, sure, and send them files and. Yeah.
I mean, everything's just become so much easier. Now, you're putting together the next issue. How long does it take to put together from beginning to end?
I mean, you know, I would say it's about 2 months.
2 months? Just about the time it takes for the one issue, next issue to come out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, of course I've scheduled things like long ago that are coming in now for this issue.
Right.
So it's, you know, I mean, a lot of it's overlapping. I'm usually working on two or three issues at once.
Right. Wow, that must be difficult. It must get confusing sometimes.
It does.
I can only imagine. You have to keep everything straight in your head. She must be a pretty organized person.
You know, I am, although I certainly won't claim that I get everything done on time or don't miss things a lot.
Right. Now, have you ever written yourself?
No, I'm not a... I have no ambitions to be a fiction writer.
You must have ideas from reading as much as you do. I guess, I mean, I read a lot too, and I always have ideas that can run through my head, and I think, oh, wouldn't that be a great idea for a book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I certainly have a lot of opinions and commentary, and I do a lot of writing, but it's in the nonfiction and critical kind of areas.
Now, your husband, does he help with the magazine too, or does he have his own job?
He is actually, you know, he works for a big-time consultant in New York, but he does a lot of the he does a lot of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll read the author's books, and then he'll write interviews for us, and he oversees our website, which is a vast and confusing project.
I can imagine.
Or it is to me, anyway.
I can imagine. When you look at these websites that are very, very complicated, and I mean, yours isn't complicated. It's, you've got, and you've also got that thing on with where you can play Hangman, which I love. I could sit there.
Oh, yeah. He made that game. I love that game.
I mean, you could just sit there for hours and play, and then you're reading all these titles and authors, like, I didn't even know that existed.
Well, you know what's so cool about it is, he's actually, his company's a database consulting firm, and the Hangman thing pulls from our Mystery Scene Reviews database, which has like 2,500 reviews in it.
Wow.
Or maybe more by now.
Oh, so that's where the titles and authors come from.
That's where the titles come from.
That's
and when
really...
you solve it, you see it goes to the review of the book.
Oh, that's neat. What a cool idea.
Very clever, right?
It is very clever.
We've got a couple more really fun games lined up that we're going to launch over the summer.
So you've been reading mysteries for years.
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember the first one you read?
My grandmother gave me a copy of the Murder at the Vicarage.
Oh, wow.
When I was very young. And I really, it was like my first grown-up book. And I have to say I didn't understand half of it because, you know, the English.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But I really liked it. I liked Miss Marple.
Yeah, me too. I'm trying to think how many years it's been since I read that book. It's been a long
time. Yeah, I think
time.
That's why she gave it to me, is because it was the cool old lady.
I've always wanted to think of a title of a book and always remember exactly what it was about. Boy, it's so difficult anymore because you just go through so many books, and to remember every plot is almost impossible.
Oh, yeah.
Because but there's certain ones you remember, certain ones that stick in your head as some of the greater ones, you know, some of the ones that really had an impact on you.
What would you say yours are?
Well, there's anything by Louise Penny, for one thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she tends to be, and then there were none is another one that I will never forget. I mean, that's the plot in that one is just so spectacular. I mean, how could you possibly not remember that?
Yeah, that's classic.
I mean, I read one recently called Say You're Sorry. Oh my God, what a wonderful book! I mean, every once in a while you just pick up one that's a gem. And you realize it as you're reading it. I read that New Year's Eve when I was really, really sick. And that says a lot when you're reading a book when you're sick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's by an author called Michael Robotham. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or not. You may have.
We haven't interviewed him for the magazine. We should do that.
Yes, I think he's got one coming up later in the year. So perfect opportunity there for you. There are just certain writers. There was one called, I forget that, what was it? Oh, called Messiah by Boris Starling that I read years ago. A friend of mine said, you have to read this book. And I thought, oh, God, Yvonne, you always have these weird, gory books you want me to read. And I was a little leery on reading it, but I read it. And my God, I can't believe how wonderful it was. I was like, wow, you're right about that one. You know, and to this day, it remains one of my favorites, my all-time favorites.
Oh.
It's just a spectacular story. I mean, to say anything about it would ruin it because there's so much involved with it. But it does start out with a car accident, though. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
But he's never written anything that I've enjoyed after that. Everything else was was okay, but that was the one that really got me. I find that with certain authors that there are certain books that they never quite reach that level of excellence again. I mean, it's close, but there's one that always... Do you find that with authors, too?
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if I just read the right book at the right time.
Yeah,
you think... You know, and, like, it made an impression on me that, you know, perhaps it objectively wouldn't, you know, make on the majority of people, but...
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I'm reading the new Andrew Gross, Don't No Way Back, which really, I mean, is a mystery, but really is more of a thriller. I mean, he's really, although what the difference between a mystery and a thriller is, people could debate for decades.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in that debate. I mean, people get so wound up into, this is a cozy, this is a thriller, it's not, you know, a mundane mystery, and I'm like, oh, you know, come on, it's all crime fiction.
That's right. Like, it is. It is crime fiction. But does it always have to have a mystery? Does it always have to be a dead body? I mean, why can't it be a why done it rather than a who done it? Or, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why people want to narrow their reading to such a point. I mean,
do you have favorite authors that you never miss their books of?
Yeah. Although, you know, I mean, they might wait a while before I read them, but...
You're not the type that goes out and buys it that same day and is reading it that same day all the time.
You know, I like, let's see, someone who I've read every one of their books is Elizabeth Peters.
Oh. Where is Elizabeth Peters? I haven't heard from her in a while. I mean, as far as a book. Is she still writing?
Yeah, I believe so.
I haven't...
But, you know, I mean, she slowed down over the...
Yeah, she's got to be in her 80s by now, I would guess.
So, yeah, wonderful books. And, you know, I mean, those books really had a big effect on me just growing up as a girl in the Midwest, so...
Is it because of the... I mean, there's a big archaeology theme with her in a lot of her books. But, I mean, is that where the interest with you is?
I like the archaeology, but I read her, as I said, all of her books, so, you know, they have a variety of settings.
Every one? Well, that's a lot of books.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, no, it's a strong, independent women who go out and have adventures, and, you know, a lot of the education, I mean, she certainly is a very erudite woman, so it was like, there's a lot of peripheral information that you got reading these books that I just loved. And
I just thought of another book that really, really, I think it's the best mystery I've ever read. It's called A Place of Execution by Val McDermid.
Oh, yeah.
What a fantastic book that is. It's one of those books you pick up and you think, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this. And what a story. I mean, the story is so perfect. I mean, there's in a lot of ways. And the shock that comes at the end of that book is just so, you never see that coming.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, that's their favorite book. Eileen Cogdell loves that book.
Yeah.
Feature writer.
Yeah. Now, let's talk more about the magazine now. There's different pages that there's at the scene, there's letters, our readers. I like that our readers recommend, so you get to see what the readers like. You know, that's it.
Yeah, that's fun. We actually use that for, picking features for the future.
Now, how do people get it to you? So, I mean, is that through the website, too, if people want to write in and tell you what their favorites are?
Yeah. People just send us emails. We have information at the... you know, in the magazine of where they can send it. And also, we have a monthly e-newsletter that is free and anyone can sign up for. And we always ask people to send us their recommendations after they get that.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So do you know about that? It's called At the Scene.
At the Scene, yeah. I don't know if I've seen it, but I'll have
to... Well, it comes out every month and it has original content in it.
Wow.
So we'll have... one of the features is Writers on Reading.
Mm-hmm.
So... we just sent out one, C.J. Box, writing about Tom Wolfe.
Oh, cool.
Which is very interesting. Actually, it's a really interesting essay.
There's so much gold to mine in the mystery field. I mean, you think, oh, well, you're only doing mysteries. There's so much more. But it just in the mystery field alone, it's just every day there's new books. I mean, there's just... And there's even books that come out you don't even know about at first. You don't. I mean, every book doesn't get the advertising that James Patterson gets or David Baldacci or whoever, you know, whoever we talk about.
I think that's why we're doing, even though it's a tough time for publishing, I think that's why Mystery Scene is doing well. Because they're really, you know, if you're interested in mysteries, it's hard to find a place to go and you see everything that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Because we cover everything.
Right.
I mean, you know...
Well,
we don't confine ourselves to a subgenre, is what I'm saying. It's like, you know, if it's crime fiction, we cover it. If it's nonfiction about mysteries, we cover it.
Right. The next issue, do you know who's going to be on the cover now? I mean, do you have that all planned out well in advance?
Yeah.
On
the spring issue, which comes out late April, it's going to be C.J. Box.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, it's a great interview.
And
I'm
actually reading his new book also and getting ready to interview him next week. So how
really?
Apropos is that?
Breaking Point, is that what you're reading?
Yes, Breaking Point, yeah. He's got two this year.
He's got another one. Yeah, The Highway is coming out.
Right. I haven't.
In a month or two.
Wow. It's amazing how they do that. They'll do a series and then they'll do a standalone, too. You'd think, when do they get the time to do all this?
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess that's what they're doing. They're sitting writing all day. I mean, what else in order to keep up with two a year? I mean, look at James Patterson, almost one a month now, you know?
Yeah, well, he has a whole group of people writing with him.
Right. But there's just so much. And when you find great writers, and that's the beauty of the Internet. When you really like a book, you can go on and tell everybody else about it. I mean, the pure joy of reading, when you share it with other people, becomes even more joy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, is there any greater joy than to give somebody a book and say, here, read this, this is terrific, and they come back and they say, yeah, you're right, it is terrific. I mean, you just sense this, you just have this wonderful feeling of, wow, I'm glad they enjoyed it as much as I did.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess very true. That must be why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, yeah, that and the fact that I love talking to authors and hearing, you know, the story behind the story, you know, finding out where they've come from, where these ideas come from. I mean, and it's amazing what they'll tell you, whether it's a real-life thing they've seen in a newspaper or, I mean, look at the newspaper nowadays. It gives you plenty of ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And with the Internet, I mean, all these stories, you look at the Huffington Post every day, there's these crazy stories coming out. It's like, how much crazier can they get? I mean, there are some of them are so ludicrous, you're laughing out loud.
Yeah.
And it's nice in this magazine, you also have color. The advertisements are in color, too.
Yeah, that was a big, I mean, when we started out 10 years ago, we were on newsprint. I just took what Ed was doing. And we were on newsprint, and, you know, gradually over the years, as we've gotten more successful, we've been able to upgrade the magazine. And, my favorite thing we did was go to a glossy all-color format.
Oh, it's so effective. I mean, it's just a beautiful magazine. I mean,
it's just so much more fun to design. And, you know, like some of these book covers are just gorgeous. And, you know, to do them justice, you really have to show them in color.
And I like when I come across books that I've read. The cover of Snow is one of the books that I've read recently. Very, very interesting book. Very different than what I expected.
She's getting a lot of buzz, Jenny Milchman.
Yeah, very, very interesting book.
Yeah, she has an essay in there about writing her first book.
And you've also...
The Cover of Snow.
Yeah.
We have a section called the New Book section where writers, like, just do a short essay about either what inspired them about the book or something, you know, that came up in their research of the book. We have you saw the one Daniel Stashower writing about.
Yes.
Alan Pinkerton.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is, like, so cool. I had no idea that he saved Abraham Lincoln's life.
Yeah.
You know.
That
a couple
is
years amazing. Before someone else killed him, but, yeah.
You wonder, you think to yourself, why have I never heard about this before? You know, where
I know.
Was I?
I know, it's a great story.
You just can't believe that you haven't heard of it some other, you haven't seen it on Jeopardy or something, you know, or heard about it in the newspaper or from somebody else, and you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, did you like that article about desecrating Poe? About
that
TV show?
That's an interesting article. I tried to watch the first episode of that show, and it so creeped me out, I just couldn't watch it. I think it's too much with serial killers. It's just too much, too overwhelming for me.
That was the point of the article. This writer, Laura Miller, was saying, you know, that you're celebrating, you know, the gore and the suffering and the pain, and you're, like, you're turning these people into pop stars.
Exactly.
And I think that's a real problem with serial killer fiction today.
I really don't want the serial killers getting any ideas about what to do. The thought of that is pretty scary. But the way it goes today, they've already renewed it for a second season, so it'll...
Yeah, well, you know, people love the gore, I guess.
They do, and I mean, I like Kevin Bacon, but the show just did not appeal to me. It was a little confusing for me, too, as far as, you know, what was it going to be about? Because they never really explained what exactly it was going to be about. You know, all the ins and outs of it, you know, and, oh, it's just, it creeps me out. Now, on page 10, you have the Edgar Award nominations, which is interesting. Everybody likes to see what's up for an Edgar, you know. And, and the Lindsay Faye's book. Now, I read one of hers that was spectacular. I haven't read Gods of Gotham yet, Did you read that one?
No. I don't think I did.
Have you read any of the nominees?
For Best Novel?
Or any of the categories?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You must have
read something.
Yeah, you know, there's always one that I haven't read, and I think, damn it. So I can't really, say, this is the one.
Right. A lot of these I have right here in my apartment now. I haven't even gotten to yet, which is... Yeah, it's weird with me. I'm so picky about what I'm reading. I want to get into a book so quickly, and it's for me. You know, you can't start out slow. I got to get right into the story. I don't like the slow beginnings in books. I mean, I put up with it, but it annoys me sometimes.
Yeah. Did you read any of the best first novels?
Let's see. I don't. You know what? I don't. I have Black Fridays, and I have the 500, and I have the Expats. I haven't read any of those yet, but
the Expats was pretty good. That's going to be a great movie. Oh, there's four strong adult leads.
Oh, cool.
I bet that's already been optioned.
Every time people mention books to me, I always think, I wish I'd read that now, so I could talk more about it. You know. That's what happens, and that's what's great about your magazine. You open it up, and 5 minutes later, there's three books you want to read.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Right away, you're like, oh, do I read the rest of the magazine, or do I go read the books?
Yeah, I have whole shelves of books that I set aside the books because I know I want to read them.
Right.
I have whole shelves.
They're to be read, you know, that big pile that everybody has that never seems to go down. All it seems to do is go up.
First novel that I thought was really interesting was Don't Ever Get Old by Daniel Friedman. It had like an 81-year-old protagonist.
Really?
It was really interesting. It was a very interesting voice.
Huh. And
I thought structurally it had some first novel problems, but I understand completely why it got nominated, because it was very fresh.
It's called Don't Ever Get Old?
Yeah.
And what is that about for?
That's for Best First Novel.
Best First Novel. Oh, there you go. Don't ever get old. I'll have to look that up. Yeah. Now, I find that Minotaur, thinking of Thomas Dunn, I think that's a part of Minotaur. Minotaur always has some great mysteries.
Yeah, they're the biggest mystery publisher. They have so many titles.
I don't think I've ever read one I didn't like, which is amazing. Because when you think of you know, there's always going to be one you don't like. But I don't remember one of that. They're the ones I think that publish Louise Penny. It's the same publisher anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's always a possibility of something you're not going to like. But I can't remember one I haven't. So they must be very picky in who they publish, I would think.
Well, they've been doing this a long time, and they certainly have the awards to prove it.
Right. I mean, I have to, in order to read everyone that's been nominated, it'll take me forever. Now, the Ace Atkins, it's up for Best Novel, The Lost Ones. Is that his alone, or is that the one he's about he's writing for Robert Parker?
That's his.
It is his alone.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep track of all these different... I've talked to Ace Atkins. He's another nice guy. You know, and that's the thing with writers. You rarely find a writer that isn't nice.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, sure. It's a very congenial group. That's why the conventions are so much fun, I think.
It is. I mean, I can think of one writer that I have met that freaked me out. I don't want to mention the name because I'm afraid of the blowback. But there is one writer that totally creeped me out. And it wasn't so much, it was the fact that they were not very open to interview. I mean, you would ask a question and it'd be yes or no answers. You know, it was, I mean, that's an interviewer's biggest fear, that you're not going to get anything more than a yes or a no, you know?
Yeah, and that's probably just somebody who's shy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the worst thing. It's like, you know, a lot of writers are just introverted, and to get out there and promote yourself is agony for them.
Right. So this brings you a lot of joy, this magazine.
It does. It does. People ask me if I want to be a writer, and I'm like, no, I'm doing exactly what I want to do.
But I mean,
yeah, as an editor.
But like me, I'm looking at this Grey Ghost Murders ad too, and that I mean, the color in it is just amazing. It's amazing what they can do. And that's another series I want to read. I've heard that the first one was tremendous. I haven't heard.
The Keith McCafferty.
Yeah, the Royal Wolf Murders I've heard is wonderful, and it got a blurb from Craig Johnson, one of my favorites. That's reason enough to read it. But I mean, just looking at the color, I mean, there's just so much in here. are there ever any writers that won't let you interview them?
There are writers that are, like, on tour or busy or, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, just sick or, you know, getting older. But, no,
You don't come across that very much? I remember one who I really wanted to interview, and he writes, and I don't know if he's still writing them, the Encyclopedia Brown, Donald J. Sobel.
I think he passed away.
Did he really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, you know, somebody should Google that, because I'm not sure.
But I tried to get an interview with him, and he wouldn't do it. He just said, no, I don't want to be interviewed. And
yeah.
I was heartbroken, because I grew up with Encyclopedia Brown. I mean, which of us didn't?
Yeah.
At some point. I mean, I used to get them from my book thing at school. You know, you'd order the book, and they would come in 3 months later. I mean, how exciting was that when you were a kid, that you had something that was coming for you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just such, and it's still, to this day, I mean, who doesn't like to get a package in the mail?
Yeah, I get like 900.
900?
Year.
Do you really?
Well, there's like 1,000, at least 1,000 mysteries published a year, and, you know, we get the advanced reader's copy and then the finished book, so I get a lot.
Oh, yeah, here's the one you were talking about, the Lincoln one, Val Allen Pinkerton. I'll have to read that. I haven't read that yet, but I've heard of him, The Hour of Peril. That's his newest book. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like just a great story. And the first female detective was there, too, and was working with Alan Pinkerton. And she posed as Lincoln's sister and traveled with him on the train. And it's pretty fun.
Wow.
Good story.
How do you find out these stories? I mean, how do they come to you? I mean, is it the authors that come to you, or do you seek this stuff out?
Well, you know, certainly if they're traditionally published and they have a publicist who will send us, you know, review copies and emails telling us what's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we're familiar, a lot of, you know, most writers are repeat writers, so we're familiar with their work. And if they have something coming up, we'll, like, shoot them an email and say, would you like to write an essay or, you know, can we interview you? And
so the combination.
It's a back and forth. I mean, it really helps to have been hanging around doing this for 20 years because I know a lot of.
But do you go on the internet looking for stories too? I mean, do you ever do that?
You mean looking for?
It's possible things to put in your magazine. I mean, whether it be stories or reviews or authors that seemed interesting. Do you ever do that, or is it mostly?
Oh well, you know, I get ideas for articles from everywhere.
Right.
But as far as our review goes, we're very careful. We do everything in-house. We don't, like, reprint a review. We have, like I said, like 30 people. All the books come here. We look at the books. We pick out what we want to review. We consider who's a good reviewer for this type of book. We mail them the book. I mean, it's very time and, you know, time intensive. But that's the way that we can control that we actually are getting a real review from a real person who isn't related to the writer, who isn't faking a name. I mean, you know, we stand by our reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you can't really control on the internet.
It's funny because all the books you mentioned in this magazine this time, the ones that really stood out for me is the one called Memory of Blood by Christopher Fowler. Isn't that weird how the plot of it sounds wonderful. I mean, I look at these plots and some of them are like, oh, that sounds all right. And the other ones you look at and you're like, ooh, that really sounds good.
Yeah.
That's what's so wonderful about mysteries, finding the right one for you. You know, like Gone Girl, which was so big last year and still is big right now, was such a, it's one of those books you just hold in your hand, you're reading it at night and you can't stop reading it, and you just, while you want to get to the end, you know when you get to the end, the good book's going to be over. And then now you got to find another one. So you're kind of torn. You know, do I finish this? I'm enjoying it so much. I hate to get rid of that enjoyment. You know, it's amazing what reading does to you. Do you find it does that to you too?
Yeah, I do. I do. I love the stories.
So how do you find good books? What do you do to find it? I mean, do you pretty much know what you're going to like before you read it, or how do you find a good book?
Well, you know, I read our reviews. I mean, you know, if it's someone, I know their taste, I'm thinking, oh, well, they liked it, or they loved it, I mean, that's how I come across new writers a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I mean, I talk to a lot of people, and, you know, I have emails, and just people I've known for a long time who'll send me a book or whatever.
And do you have people that will give you recommendations that are always right when they give you those recommendations?
No.
I have a way.
I know.
I thought for sure you were going to say yes. I'm trying to think if I have anybody. Now, a writer that I just started reading she's got four books, Tana French, who is just
She's wonderful. Oh, my God. Yeah,
I mean,
great.
The talent that woman has is just amazing.
She's a huge reader favorite with our readers, like the Readers Recommend.
Right.
I swear, for a while there, it was like every other one was Tana French until I think everybody realized they were all recommending the same book.
there's just something about her books. Everything she writes is fantastic. And, I mean, the talent that woman has, and to think she was an actress before.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense, right? She really understands character.
Right. But, I mean, you look at the young actresses today, how many could write a great mystery? I think if we put some of the... Can you imagine the Kardashians writing a good mystery?
Yeah. Oh, they're not really actresses, though, are they?
Well, that's true. You could make a point for that, too. But, I mean, there are just certain... Elizabeth George is another one that always writes a great book. I mean, she's been writing for years and years, and
mm-hmm.
yet everything... I have never read a book by her that I didn't like. I mean, they're just so... There are authors like that, and Louise Penny's another one. I mean, I tend to lean toward the psychological. It sounds like you do too, but you know,
yeah.
Mike O'Connelly's another one. I can only think of one of his I didn't like. And you know, there's over and over again these authors that we come to depend on to tell a really good story. I mean, because face it, there's a lot of with publishing. There's a lot of, you know, get the book out, rather than. I mean, I find that sometimes that. You know, there's too many books by an author, so you just, how can everyone be good if you have three or four a year, you know?
Yeah.
It's very hard. It's very, very difficult to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do think that people, book buyers these days really rely on reviews a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that it's just hard for them to find a good, reliable place to get reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So did you follow that whole sock puppet thing? That was going on.
No, I saw something about that. What was that about?
Well, it's when someone assumes a fake online identity. It's called a sock puppet, and then they go on and they give themselves good reviews.
Oh, really?
or they go over to their rivals and they give them bad reviews.
Oh my God!
It's
how
pretty
horrible.
Scummy. But yeah, there was a bunch. It was a bunch of it's like four or five mystery writers who were doing it and got caught.
Really?
So. Yeah, it was in the UK and also in the US.
Now, there's something in this magazine about that, isn't there?
Someone said something about sock puppetry, yeah.
I remember reading something. As soon as you said that, it clicked in my head that I'd seen something in here about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, that old New Yorker joke, you know, online no one knows that you're a dog.
Wow.
Like, online no one knows that, you know... You're the writer's wife or something.
That's fascinating. And you even have something about Hugh Laurie's audiobook in here. How interesting. I turn the page and I'm like, Hugh Laurie, what's he doing in a mystery magazine?
You know? Oh, yeah, there's a lot of crossover.
Yeah, there really is. And it's just, that's one of the beautiful things about your magazine. You never know what's going to be on the next page. So you're turning the page and you just don't know what to expect next.
Yeah, speaking of audiobooks, Dick Lotke is... you know, he's a prize-winning critic. He's written for the LA Times for years, and he's been our audiobook reviewer for 11 years now.
Wow.
And I think he's really he's underrated. People don't appreciate what an incredible job he does on these books.
Hmm.
Like, he knows this field like nobody else.
Wow. How do you find these great people to write for your magazine? I mean, do they just come recommended by other people, or...
Well, you know, this is where I was very lucky to have worked at The Armchair Detective, because that was it's sort of the founding magazine in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, for criticism. And all these people were working there. I mean, Dick Lotke worked there.
No, that was like a quarterly magazine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, and I've asked you about this before, not during this interview, but you put out five issues a year. Would it be more difficult to put out more?
Yes, it would.
Because, as you know, I want one every month. I'd love to see one every month, but, you know, and I'm sure other people have said that to you.
No, there's actually enough material, but we could do it every month, although I think it would be awfully hard on the columnists. Because we have the columnists who do, like, the short story reviews and audio reviews. And
we'll put a lot more work for them.
Yeah, I don't know that they could keep up.
And how would you do one? Wouldn't that be hard on you to do one a month?
I don't think I could.
At least you're honest about it, you know, but...
I think what we're going to move to eventually, I mean, years down the line, is we'll be doing digital editions, which, you know, certainly aren't work-free, but, you know, it's easier than working with a printer.
It must be nice to come to work every day and work on a magazine where you just love, I mean, you're just a mystery lover, so to be able to do this, do something that you really love, I mean, how many people can say that?
Not very many. I'm very lucky.
And then you get to go home and read. And that's another joy that you have. I mean, you can't ever replace that joy with anything. I mean, there's once you hit on what you want to do with your life and what makes you happy, and you get there. You know, it's just a wonderful thing. I mean, you wake up in the morning anxious. I mean, you want to be at work. And how many people can say that when they wake up in the morning they can't wait to get to work?
Yeah. I really do enjoy my job.
Now, how many conventions do you get to a year?
You know, it varies.
Let's talk about this year. How many will you be at this year, do you think?
Well, we're going to Malice Domestic in Washington, mm-hmm. and it's like the first weekend of May, mm-hmm. which is a very friendly, fun conference mm-hmm. we've been going to for a long
time. My birthday is May 3rd, so...
You could go down as a birthday present to yourself.
That's right. And that's usually down near Maryland somewhere, or D.C.?
It is. It's in Bethesda, which is, you know... like 5 minutes on the subway.
How many people get to that? I mean, is it a huge crowd?
It's about 500.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fairly large. And a lot of writers come over from England because it's an easy flight.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you go to BoucherCon every year?
Yes, we do. Unless there's like a family something going on. But,
that's always fun. And that attracts thousands of people.
Oh, yeah. That's about 2,000.
I remember the one year I was there, Ruth Mandel was there, who never makes it across the United States. I mean, that was a rare, rare thing.
Yeah. Which one was that?
It was either Las Vegas or Philadelphia. It must have been Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, right. Okay.
I think it was Las Vegas. I remember her speaking, and she's such a fascinating woman. Although it was a big thing about her only signing for an hour. She only signed for an hour and left, and... Boy, that caused a lot of trouble. But, you know,
well,
when you get to be as big as she is, I guess you can do what you want. just a fascinating woman. I mean, some of these writers are just—you could sit all day and talk to them, and never fully get the fascinating parts of them, just part of it. You know, and that's what the joy is of interviewing, is you get all this fascinating stuff you didn't know before. When I asked Tess Gerritsen, I said to her, when you became successful, what was the first thing you went out and bought? And she comes back to me and says, underwear. You know, it's hysterical. I mean, you don't get that every day. And it was just, I mean, it stays with me even today, even all these years after she said it to me. It was hysterical. I was like, what's she going to say, a new car, a big boat, or a big house? No, she says underwear. Yeah. I mean, you never know what the authors are going to say, and that brings so much joy.
So are you going to go to BoucherCon this year?
It's in Albany, isn't it? Albany, New York? I would love to go. I don't know. I'll have to see. It depends on my job situation, to be quite honest. So.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go because it's an easy drive from New York City. So.
Do they still have the chocolate thing they do at night? They used to have
the St. Martin's chocolate party?
Yeah.
I don't know. They did that at Malice.
Did they really?
They did it a couple years at BoucherCon. I don't know if they still do that or not.
I think they did it in Vegas. I remember Stuart Kaminsky was there, and he was playing the piano, and amazing.
Yeah, it's a publisher-sponsored thing, so it kind of depends.
I mean, I remember I went up to Edward D. Hockby when he was still alive in Vegas, and just the most wonderful human being you could, mm-hmm. and what a talent he had for short story. I mean, here he is in the elevator, and I'm talking to him, and it's like you're there one-on-one with these authors, and you're like, how could I possibly be talking to this person? I've been reading them for years and years and years. It's so moving and so wonderful. You know, you can't ever replace that.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's what you get to do with. I mean, some of the bigger authors, you have to stand in line a lot longer for. But God, when you get to the front and you're actually talking to that author, I mean, nothing replaces the joy that creates.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you should come to Albany. I think there's going to be a lot of people there.
Yeah, I really should.
That'd be a good book room.
I could think of all the interviews I could do and put on my website. Oh, just the thought of it.
How do you do your interviews? Do you just, like, take a microphone and...
Yeah, well, I have a thing in my ear, and it records right under this Olympus recorder I have sitting on my lap here.
Interesting.
So, and then just go right to my website. So, and then I've got... I just interviewed Patricia Cornwell last year, which was... What a thrill that was. I mean, this is one... I've read every one of her books, every single one. And to be able to talk to her on the phone... I mean, it's so moving and so amazingly exciting, you know? But at the same time, I mean, what are they going to be like? What if they're really arrogant? What if they curse me out, you know? I have no idea how they're going to react to me. Like, who are you? I remember when I interviewed Tim Green, who I think he's doing more kids' books now, but he was doing thriller writing at the time. And his wife answered the phone. I knew I was in trouble when his wife answered the phone. I thought, oh, this is not going to go well. He doesn't even answer the phone. If the writer doesn't answer the phone, you know it's going to be a bad interview. Well, he got on the phone, and you could tell instantly he was bored to death with all. He's like, let's get this over with, and I really don't want to do this. Mm. By the time the interview was done, it was like 45 minutes to an hour. I forget. That's how much we did. He was telling me what he reads on the beach. He was so into the interview. It was amazing. I won him over in that little short period of time. I completely won him over. It was amazing.
Yeah. I think people get really worried about these interviews.
Yeah, what are you going to ask me? You're going to ask me something personal, or who I'm sleeping with, or what? They never know, I guess.
You know, yeah, well, you know, you don't know, and especially with an interview, you're being recorded as you're reacting, right?
Right, and the authors, you know, what am I going to be asking? You know, it always goes through their mind, and then when I say 45 minutes, they're like, oh my God, what are you going to ask me for 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you and I have been talking for 45 minutes now, and, you know, it doesn't seem like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But, and we have to, unfortunately, have to cut it short at some point. This has been so wonderful to talk to you. I mean, I've seen your picture, and you and your husband, and I thought, I got to interview them, because I'm sure they've got some stories to tell. But this magazine is incredible, Mystery Scene. I mean, I just got my subscription for it. And
Well, welcome.
And it's just, I can't wait to get the next issue. I'm chomping at the bit already.
So. Yeah. Well, let me ask you, are you a book collector?
Well, I have lots of books, let's put it that way. Collector, okay. Collector meaning, you know, saving them in plastic and making sure they look pristine, no.
Okay.
I don't do that much, but I do have a lot of books.
Because the one thing that we're sort of developing is the book collecting, you know, information for book collectors.
Oh, like really?
Articles. Yeah, so like on page 16 of the winter issue, we have Criminal Associations, which is... It's about a book that John Dixon Carr autographed to Marjorie Allingham.
Oh, neat.
He wrote the biography of Arthur Conan Doyle, John Dixon Carr did. And then he autographed a copy and with a note and everything to Marjorie Allingham. And it's a book that we acquired for our collection.
Oh.
And then we asked John Dixon Carr's biographer, who is, you know, Douglas G. Green.
Mm-hmm.
To write the article, and you know, I love like all the different associations and the connections between all these people. Because I mean, Doug Green is kind of famous in his own right. He's the publisher of Crippen and Landrieu books.
Oh yeah, I know that. I think they did Edward D. Hawk books, if I remember.
Oh yeah, yeah, they do short story collections. I mean, he's a pioneer in that field.
Short stories. I mean, when I think of the short story writing thing, the two that come to mind are Edward D. Hawk and Isaac Asimov. Those are the two that have most influenced my life. Now, I'm sure there's other... I mean, but there aren't a lot of good short story writers out there. I mean, that I've read. Maybe
yeah.
I'm missing some.
Well, you should take a look at The Crippen and Landrieu.
Yeah, I think I will now that you say that. But I'm so particular about short story writing. I mean, I thought John Grisham's Ford County one was terrific. Absolutely terrific. But, I mean, I tried Dean Koontz. I didn't like his short stories. But, I mean, some are so good at it, and some are, you know, okay, but you wouldn't go back to them necessarily.
It's hard to, you know, it's hard to get a plot into a short story.
Absolutely.
I mean, it takes, you have to be working in miniature, I think, is harder than...
Yeah, I think writers will actually say that the short story is harder to write than the novel.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Which is, you think, well, wait a minute, how can that be? It takes how long to write a short story, you know? And how long to write a novel? I mean, it takes a year to write a novel. Well, that's what most authors will tell you, but how long does it take to write a short story? But I guess you're getting that all that those ideas in one little, whatever, 20, 30 pages, whatever it is must be very difficult. You got to get everything just right. That's not easy.
Yeah, I would think.
Well, this has been great. I really appreciate you doing this for me, taking the time out on your busy schedule, and I can't wait to see CJ Box on the next issue.
Oh, yeah, I'm on the hunt for good photos of him.
Oh, really? Very, very cool. I'll have to ask
Western
him next week. I'll have to ask him next week where we can find some.
Oh, he's been very helpful. So.
Is he? Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
I think we'll have it nailed down by then.
So we've been talking to Kate Stein about her wonderful mystery magazine called Mystery Scene, and you can get it at all your Barnes & Nobles. You can get it from Amazon online, and I'm sure, and the Mystery Scene website.
Oh, and starting in with our next issue, it will be available on the Nook Reader at the Barnes & Noble digital newsstand.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. That's excellent. Thank you so very much.
Oh, well, thank you. I really enjoyed our talk.
Yeah, me too. This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.